I've entitled my sermon today, Travel Light and Live Simply. And the Old Testament passage that we read today is very familiar to everyone here, I'm sure. My first introduction to the Ten Commandments came from that movie, Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments. It was on every year around Easter. We watched it on TV every year, and I remember the opening credits would have who produced the film and who wrote it, and then it got to the end of the opening credits and it said, based on the Holy Scriptures, in these big old-fashioned letters. And I remember thinking, that's really impressive, a movie based on the Bible. And this is in a home where we didn't really go to church. Well, imagine my disappointment when I read the Bible many years later and started going to church and found out that the romance between Moses and the Egyptian woman was not real. But I did learn the Ten Commandments, and that's really where I learned them from, because they were not really taught in my home. But the Ten Commandments are actually already very influential in our culture. We can think about it. They actually participate in our civic life every day. There's laws against stealing and murdering. It's a crime to lie under oath or giving evidence in a police case. Adultery has never been illegal, but it carries legal implications in a divorce case. And these elements are especially found in the New Testament as well. It's not just an Old Testament thing. If you read the Sermon on the Mount especially, the influence of the Ten Commandments is filled within the Sermon on the Mount. For example, in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says, you've heard it said that you shouldn't murder anyone and that if you do, you're liable to judgment. But I say to you, if you even speak harshly, then you're liable to judgment. So Jesus spoke with the imprint of the Ten Commandments in his speech. And we can see, if we've been to Sunday school, we probably all know them. The first four are about our relationship to God and worship, and then the last six are all about our relationship to one another. And you can see how these things would produce harmony in a community. Rejecting stealing and murder is good for society. Honoring our parents is good for society. Staying faithful to our spouse is good. But when we get to the coveting part, that's not nearly as straightforward. A number of years ago, when I was teaching we were going through the Old Testament with teens, I actually taught a lesson on the Ten Commandments, and I started with the tenth and worked my way backwards. My thought was that coveting, wanting something that somebody else has, can lead to all those other things. I want something that isn't mine, so I'll steal it. I get caught stealing it, so I lie about stealing it and then point a finger at somebody else. Somebody is dissatisfied in their marriage, so this person goes out and has an affair. And you can see where I'm going with this. When we get tempted, it's easy for our thoughts to kind of go spiraling downwards. And ultimately, coveting is a symptom that we lack contentment with what we have. What do you think of when you think of being content? Where does your mind go? A lot of people will think about a baby. Think about a baby all snugly wrapped in a blanket and close to her, his mother, well fed and warm. And that's the picture of contentment. Our daughter was a very content baby. She slept well. She liked to sit on her blanket with her toys and her books. She was so content that she never even crawled. She just walked one day when she was 15 months old. There might have been stuff she wanted, but she was just content with what she was doing. This was my first child, and I remember thinking, this mothering thing isn't as bad as everybody says it is. And then I had another baby. My son Patrick was already content in the womb. 10 days late, he was very unhappy to be forcibly ejected from the womb. And he made it known by crying a lot. Later on, when he didn't cry quite so much, he was not content to just sit on a blanket with toys and books because he had somebody he wanted to go after. So he was off and crawling right away. And that he was not content at all. And he started following her. Contentment is an attitude of the heart. It isn't pretending that things are always okay, that there's nothing wrong. It isn't being apathetic. But it means that we find peace in spite of what may be wrong. And it means we have enough. It's very hard to live with the idea that we have enough in our culture, because in a capitalistic society, it thrives on discontent. Furniture companies and car companies, they want you to be dissatisfied with what you have, so you'll buy their stuff. Women especially, they're supposed to be discontent with their face, with their bodies, with their clothes, and so they want people to buy their products. And these ads succeed. Somebody's buying these things. I don't know how Instagram knows how old I am, but I regularly get ads for makeup that will make me look like I'm 25 again, and then a weight loss program to make the rest of me look like I'm 25 again. We live in a culture that wants bigger and better and more, and it can be very hard to find a place of contentment because everybody around us is saying you need more, you need more. But following Jesus is always against the culture. We're always countercultural when we follow Jesus. And in our New Testament reading today, in Timothy, Paul is talking about the value of contentment. He's writing to Timothy, who's at Ephesus, and he's starting a church there, and they're running into a problem because there's a lot of wealth in Ephesus. Roman culture was very divided. You had the really, really rich, and you had the really, really poor, and everybody wanted to be the really, really rich. And people wanted to move into those upper levels of society, and so when the church got in there, they're kind of battling against this mentality of wanting more and more. But if we know anything about what Jesus taught, this is going right against what he was teaching, because Jesus taught the first would be last, and the last would be first, and Jesus taught that the poor would be lifted up. So this was a problem, and Paul writes to Timothy to rebuke the false teachers, and then he tells them that godliness with contentment is great gain. In contradiction to the false teachers who said, you know, money and wealth and things are great gain, he says, no, contentment and godliness is the great gain. It was a very, very countercultural idea. It was revolutionary. Then he reminds them that they can't take their worldly wealth with them when they die. We brought nothing into the world and we can't take it out. And it reminds me of the story of Job. Who knew more about losing everything than Job? He lost his family, he lost his wealth. And after this happens, he says, naked, I came from my mother's womb, and naked, I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And that is our reality as well. We can't take anything with us when we go. In the last 4 years, both sets of parents, Neil's and my parents, moved from big houses that were too big for them into smaller houses that were more suitable to them. But they had a lot of stuff. Both sides had a lot of stuff. My parents had to get off-site storage to store the stuff they couldn't get rid of. And Neil's dad has a basement full of stuff that he has yet to get rid of. And there was a lot of stuff to begin with, and they still have all of this stuff. And watching all of this unfold over the last few years has really left an impression on me. We have a detached double garage with a loft. It's a great garage. And when we moved in 2005, we had teenagers, and we had a lot of stuff from our other house. And our kids were fortunate enough to have grandparents who bought them things. And bought them things, they did. And we had a box of stuffed animals that Neil tells me was 13 cubic feet. Now, I don't know how big that is, but I'm thinking it's at least the size of a small chest freezer. And on the side of the box, Neil had written, precious items that Kim does not want to throw out. And it sat up there until about 5 years ago. We said to the kids, you need to come and you need to go through these stuffed animals and take what you want. They all found something. They were miraculously not eaten by mice. But we got rid of 80% of those stuffed animals in the landfill. And that made me feel kind of like, wow, we just threw away all these things. And I look around at the stuff that's still there, and I look at some of the stuff in my house, and I think, why do I have all this stuff? What am I going to do with all this stuff? And my parents' stuff is going to become my problem, and Neil's dad's stuff is going to become Neil's problem. And then our stuff is going to become our kids' problem. So what do you do with all this stuff? And not only can you not take our, we can't take our possessions with us, they can be lost in a minute. Neil's worked in insurance for 28 years, and he has seen his share of house fires. And it doesn't matter how well off you are, how much you have, a fire can, it can take everything in a very short amount of time. You can't take it with him. And think back to when COVID first began and all the businesses that all of a sudden could not operate anymore because things were closed down. Now, I like my British crime shows and my British mysteries. I watch them. They're very comforting. They're very repetitive. But there was one particular show that I watched, and there was an actor that I really enjoyed, and I'd seen him in a number of things, and he was probably a well-known actor in the UK. During the pandemic, he delivered food, like with a skip the dishes, DoorDash thing, because there were no plays. He was heavy into theater at the time. There were no plays. There were no theaters. There were no movie sets or TV sets working, so he had to do something. Anything we have can be lost in a minute. And during when we were having a lot of lockdowns, it really did force me to ask myself, do I need this or do I want this? And I think that's a good question that we can ask all the time, because we don't want to base our contentment in life on the things that can just go like that, because then all of a sudden, where are you? Paul says also that money is the root of all kinds of evil, and in pursuit of money, people have turned away. And that's an interesting idea. Why would this happen? Why would somebody who is gathering wealth to himself turn away from God and be tempted? Well, just think back to what I said about coveting, tempting us to do other things, to make bad decisions. The more we have, the more stress it is to keep those things, to maintain those things. And we end up making bad decisions. We may make choices that, you know, are not consistent with what we believe. And we become fixated on into the neglect of everything else. We also don't think that we need anybody. When people are well off, sometimes it's easy when we're really focusing on that to think, wow, I'm like the author of my own good fortune here, and forget that God has given everything to us. And there isn't anything wrong with owning things, because God gives us. God is so good and so gracious. He gives us so much. But it is possible to have all of these things and not turn them into something that is going to take us away, our attention away from God. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talked about storing up treasures, and he says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume and thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there is your heart also. And this idea of storing up heavenly treasures is all about what our ultimate loyalty is too, because the Sermon on the Mount is all about how to live in the kingdom of God. And in a kingdom, there's always going to be an allegiance to some but something. Our allegiance isn't to be to the possessions we have in the kingdom, because they're going to fade away, but the kingdom of God is eternal. So we need to look for, find ways to be content with gathering these heavenly treasures and not making ourselves dependent on the earthly treasures. And one of the ways we can do that is to just seek to serve God in every single thing that we do. It isn't rocket science. Everywhere you look, there's something that needs somebody. Look around. Where's the need? Where can I fill that need? And we can also practice gratitude. Everything we have is from God, and sometimes we forget how thankful we should be for every little tiny thing. Just even going through your house and being thankful for whatever you have, for food, for a warm bed, for, you know, shelter from the rain. There's an old hymn, you probably know it, called Count Your Blessings. And it says, count your many blessings, name them one by one. Count your many blessings, see what God has done. And that's a good habit to get into, because when we have gratitude, then we are so much more generous with other people. And it can really change our attitude. The English theologian John Stott said, contentment is the secret of inward peace. It remembers the stark truth that we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. Life, in fact, is a pilgrimage from one moment of nakedness to another. So we should travel light and live simply. Our enemy is not possessions, but excess. Our battle cry is not nothing, but enough. We've got enough. Simplicity says if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. It's been a little over a year since my mother-in-law passed away, and I mentioned earlier that my father-in-law has a storage room full of stuff, which I think she probably put the majority of the stuff in there. She was a pack rat, and she liked to make crafts, and she liked to find interesting things to make her crafts with. So she had a huge collection of things like silk flowers and dried up stuff that was probably a fire hazard. But it didn't matter. If she saw something and it looked interesting and you could, the way the kids, my kids would say it, if grandma can find something to hot glue to something, she'll get it. But I would not say that she found her contentment in that at all. In fact, I think if it all burnt up, she would have been okay. She, if you talk to anyone that knew her, her contentment was entirely in serving God, entirely. And she, if things came up that were unexpected, that blew her over, they wouldn't blow her over, she was fine. She was content in all the things that she did. She knew and she lived that godliness with contentment is great gain. And I always knew that about her. I'm not always content. I am preaching to myself in all of this because I don't like change. I like routine. I don't like the unexpected, and I don't like a blip on the screen. And when things go wrong, I'm not always content. So I need to learn to work on that as well. And right now we're in the season of Lent. And as we approach Easter, our thoughts are drawn to the cross. The night Jesus was betrayed, he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he prayed 3 times. My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me, yet not what I want, but what you want. And that is supernatural contentment. And it reminds us that sometimes being content means accepting hard things. But it wouldn't be contentment if it was easy. It's something that we have to work towards. And we can be content because of Jesus going to the cross for us. We can be content in God, and it's possible for us.